This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Over the last few years, reporter Mark Chisano has made himself into a kind of bard of Nassau County. Nassau is just east of New York City, past Queens.
It's the original suburb, you know, home of Levittown, where people sort of experimented with what the suburbs were going to look like. So it's funny. It's a little bit of a throwback.
For politicians, Mark says, Nassau's gotten this reputation as being a suburban crystal ball. Ronald Reagan famously said that when a Republican dies and goes to heaven, it looks a lot like Nassau County. Then the winds seemed to shift. Barack Obama won here twice, then Hillary Clinton. But a couple years after that, Republican fabulist George Santos entered the scene. Mark was working for Newsday back then.
Yeah, I wrote a little piece about him on the day he announced his 2020 run. And yeah, I was kind of following him along ever since.
Wow. Wild ride, huh?
It's been weird, you know? It was weird from the beginning a little bit. Like in that phone call, which was supposed to be his launch, he said, "I'm actually in Florida right now."
What?
Like, why are you in Florida while you're launching your New York campaign?
I'm in the spiritual homeland of Republicans.
Yeah. But very strange from the beginning.
We all know how this strange story ended, with Santos's lies unspooling. He got kicked out of Congress back in December. Now, the race is on to replace him, which means in parts of Nassau County, today's election day. I read that both sides in this race, they're putting as much as $10 million into this special election to replace George Santos.
It's wild.
It's huge.
It's so much money. I was talking to a guy that I play basketball with who's not a political guy. And I told him I was, you know, writing about the race. And he said, "Oh, yeah, I know all about it." And I was sort of surprised, but he said, you know, he watches Jeopardy and it's like every other commercial around the New York metropolitan area is this. You can't miss it.
So this race is generating a lot of money, a lot of interest. But whoever wins George Santos's seat, they're only going to be in Congress until the end of the year, right?
Yes. It's a wild, wild situation.
So why are both parties paying so much attention to this election?
Well, I think there's two reasons. One is that it's a very tight, margin in the House, right? There's also this question of message testing that both parties are sort of seeing what is working right now. It's almost like a freebie, a trial run before the November races. And so we're getting maybe a preview.
You're saying Nassau County is like a laboratory.
It is a bit of a laboratory, yeah. Kind of always has been, too.
Today on the show, how much can this one special election tell you about the rest of this political year? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So when George Santos got the boot from his colleagues in December, it started the clock on a special election process in New York's 3rd District, a push for someone to keep his seat warm. This process works a little differently from a normal election.
There's no primary. There's just the two parties pick their candidates. So they chose, it was a real literal smoke-filled room kind of thing. Voters had no input on who was going to be their candidates. And so now we have them. We have on the Democratic side, Tom Suozzi, who is a guy who held this seat for 3 terms. He actually beat George Santos the first time. And then he decided to run for governor, a long shot bid to New York Governor Kathy Hochul's right.
You know, New Yorkers had such high hopes when the governor took office, and she pledged to make it the most ethical, the most transparent government in the history of New York State. And that simply hasn't happened.
That's why he lost in that primary, and then he's kind of looking for a job, I guess. And so he is back. He's back. He's a big name in Nassau County politics. He's had long family ties to the district. He and a bunch of family members were mayors of Glen Cove, which is one of the cities in the district. Then he became Nassau County Executive, which the way I put it is it's kind of like a peer position to New York City mayor right across the border. This is a big job. You know, you run the police department. You do a lot of things.
And Suozzi is quite moderate, right? Like, he was one of the people who was involved with the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is, it's sort of the anti-progressive caucus. It's like, we're going to work across the aisle, get things done, that sort of thing.
Yeah. If you talk to Tom Suozzi for more than, you know, 15 minutes, it's really unlikely that he won't mention that he was once vice chair of the bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus. This is a thing that he's very proud of, is really central to his political ethos, for sure.
The ballot says Tom Suozzi is running to represent Syosset, Levittown, Douglaston. The record says Tom represents a place you can't find on a map, Tom, called Common Ground.
Let's work together.
So tell me about the Republican candidate. Her name is Mazie Pilip.
That's right. Yeah. Mazie Pilip is she's in just the beginning of her second term as the Nassau County legislator, you know, lower level job. So she's a bit of a newcomer on the scene. She has a fascinating, fascinating biography. She's an Ethiopian Israeli immigrant, served in the IDF, and actually married an immigrant as well, a Ukrainian immigrant. So she has these really, she kind of touches all these hot button issues right now in all these interesting ways.
Mazie Pilip, soldier, mother, conservative fighter. In Congress, Mazie will secure the border, work with ICE to...
She's also a registered Democrat, I read.
She's a registered Democrat, that's right. And, you know, this is weirdly not that uncommon on Long Island. A lot of people kind of go back and forth. But yeah, it is a bit surprising that she hasn't changed yet, right? She's not like that new to politics, and she hasn't filed the paperwork to change yet. She says she's going to do so after the election.
Yeah. It's interesting because I really get why Tom Suozzi would be running for this seat. Like, he's done it before. I can see the party going to him and being like, hey, could you just get into this race one more time. Everybody knows you. You know,
yeah.
It just seems very familiar.
Get the band back together.
Exactly. But with Mazie Pilip, it's kind of interesting. I don't know what her personal motivation is. Like, and actually I've heard some questions about whether Pilip herself is steering her campaign. Like, she doesn't even have any campaign employees to speak of, right?
Yeah, so it's been a strange campaign for Pilip, because when she appears all around the district, she's often with someone else from the Republican Party. cynics might call them minders, you know, people who kind of speak for her even and kind of introduce her and sort of set the tone for the conversation. So that has surprised some people. I will say, though, that when she does talk, she is very forceful. She sort of can get fiery and has, like I said, this biography that so perfectly matches this political moment. So it's possible that she's kind of growing into this role, even though she has not been kind of at the front of all of her appearances.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I look at this Republican candidate and I just think, I can't tell if the Republican Party is learning from their experience with Santos because they're constantly minding this person and very much controlling their rollout, or whether they're not learning from the experience because clearly Mazie Philip is very inexperienced or much less experienced than Tom Suozzi.
Certainly less experienced. She herself said that the Republicans vetted her with three different firms. And I do think I've sort of, you know, done my own reporting on that on the side. I think that they were kind of careful to make sure she was who she said she was. You know, one thing that is consistent in what the Republican Party has done here is reaching out to a new kind of voter community. That is what Santos was. This was sort of the promise of Santos, was that he was not the kind of typical Republican candidate for the Nassau GOP. They used to say that Nassau Republican candidates had Republican hair, which, as you can imagine, was kind of white, straight, you know, it's an old person's, a white person's hair, right?
Yeah.
So there is a different approach here, right? And Republicans have been benefited by this, especially in Nassau, by reaching out to these new communities. And so I think it is a sort of interesting strategy that they're trying once again.
Can we talk about what the major issues have shaped up to be in this race?
So big one is definitely immigration. Huge, huge issue.
Why is that?
So I think that it is a sort of return to the nationalized issues that are probably going to drive the election in November, different from what it had been in this district before, which was kind of very focused on some local things, including crime in New York City, or alleged crime in New York City. So immigration has been a big thing. There are these thousands of newcomers to New York City, some of whom are, this district straddles the city suburbs line. So there is a little piece of this in the city in Queens, and there are a bunch of migrants, asylum seekers being sort of held there, living there in a shelter. And certainly some are going across the county line. There are these very sort of vibrant immigrant communities on Long Island. And so certainly people will kind of make their way, towards family and friends and people that they kind of know culturally there on Long Island. There does not seem to have been a huge, huge migration out east to Long Island yet. So this is still a little bit of a sense rather than a true something that's really happening on the ground. But you hear it a lot. You hear a lot of fear about the changing nature of school systems, the tax base, the ways that people are sort of concerned about immigrants changing their way of life.
Yeah. It's interesting because the head of the Democratic Party has been talking about this incident that recently happened in New York City, where a couple of NYPD officers were allegedly attacked by a group of migrants. And those migrants were released without bail. And there was just clearly this huge concern that this would impact the race in Long Island, this Nassau County race. And that was interesting to me because it would be an emotional reaction. Like, this didn't happen in Nassau County.
Well, and I totally, that's right. There's two things here. One is that it's an emotional reaction because it happened in New York City. Second thing is that it's really unclear if what the police say happened in that incident actually happened. Some video has come out showing a very, very different picture of how the incident started. Does not seem to have been nearly the way it was described at first as sort of this kind of very aggressive migrants doing something really terrible. So it's the classic. It's really straight from the Republican playbook, is take kind of one-off incidents that sometimes are not even true or certainly exaggerated in terms of what happened, and use them to paint this really dark, dark picture of New York City and crime and people who look different, and use that to their political advantage.
Yeah. I mean, clearly Tom Suozzi, the Democrat, is feeling the heat here. Like, he's said some things in the past about whether ICE immigration control should be operating in Nassau County. And he said those things for good reason. Like, ICE was trying to come into the county and not work with the local police and trying to knock on people's doors when they maybe didn't have the right address for the people that they were seeking. So it seems to me he has real reasons for not wanting to work with ICE, like previously when he was in charge. But now it seems like he's really being, like, his feet are being put to the fire over that.
Absolutely. There's a quote that's been playing in all these ads of him saying, you know, that he kicked ICE out of Nassau County. And it is for this very sort of specific reason that his police commissioner basically asked for some help. This is a sort of a supporting law enforcement moment. And he's been hit for it because in ads, it's really easy to kind of take things out of context.
Illegal immigrants arriving by the busload. Why? Because Tom Suozzi repeatedly weakened America's borders.
What's so interesting to me about Suozzi is that he certainly is no kind of lefty.
Yeah, now he's calling on President Biden to shut down the border, right?
Yes, sort of, kind of strangely, uniquely among many Democrats, right? This is not a classic Democratic position. So this is a guy who's deeply, certainly in that middle zone, you know? But the problem is that when you have spent a lifetime in government, you have lots of positions that people can poke at you when they have no history or very little history in government and few policy positions. So another one was that he, kind of was supportive of centers for day laborers, many of them immigrants, in Glen Cove, a place where he was a mayor at one point. Again, kind of rational, sort of down the middle, simple thing, you know, supporting businesses, you know, straightening things up, making things kind of shipshape. But now that looks that's very different from the way people talk about immigration right now.
I look at this immigration issue right now, and to me, it just feels so much like the debate over crime during the 2022 midterms. And it feels like that both because I'm not sure how real of an issue that crime issue was in the first place, but politically, it really did not go well for New York Democrats. And they ended up losing 4 seats, which arguably helped cost the Democrats the House of Representatives. So to me, it just seems like, ooh, this feels familiar.
It definitely does feel familiar, you know, new sort of cover, but same playbook in a way. The other thing that I think is different here is that it's a playbook that can be used nationally, whereas the crime one was in some ways most effective in New York because of this bail legislation thing that you could kind of pin some amount of responsibility directly to Democrats. But the immigration thing is national, obviously, and owned by Biden in a way, although he will try to avoid that, right? I think we're going to be seeing this playbook around the country.
What are the polls saying about where this Nassau County race stands right now?
So both the private and public polling seems to be that it's very tight. Tom Suozzi in the public ones is kind of up by single digits, basically within the margin of error.
So you would not put money on this election, one way or the other.
You know, it's not where you want to be if you've spent so much money and you're a guy who has a ton of history in the district, right? It's very, very close.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking try free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Three days ago, which is to say 3 days before the election, Tom Suozzi and Mazi Pilip had their first and only debate. The timing here seems strange because early voting was like before this.
In process. It had already started.
Yeah. So that's strange, first of all. But I am kind of curious what happened when these two met face to face. How did it go?
So Tom Suozzi had been pushing for more debates, and Pilip, for whatever reason, didn't do it. She has said, oh, you have a fascination with my schedule. But she certainly, her schedule was tight. She didn't do any of these joint events until the single belated debate. And certainly there was this sense that she didn't want to be sort of up there in front of the cameras alone, you know, without help.
So what did this look like? Like, what were the questions they got and how did they respond?
The questions were very focused on these big issues like immigration, Israel, abortion. She has tried to carve out this kind of middle zone on abortion, but was pressed kind of repeatedly by Suozzi. She I guess I would say that she held her own in that she didn't kind of Suozzi didn't absolutely walk all over her. She was able to, this is kind of theater coverage in a way, you know, but she was able to sort of sound definitive and forceful and all those things, which is the like very base level, I think, the way that people watch these debates. But certainly Suozzi was able to kind of point out a lot of kind of questions about her positions. There was a lot of kind of things that weren't very clear when she described them, including on abortion, like what her actual position was.
Right. Mazi Pilip says she's pro-life. She has 7 children. She deeply believes in that, but she doesn't want to force her opinion on others, theoretically.
Correct. And, you know, has said she wouldn't vote for a national ban on abortion. Well, fine. That's what all the New York Republicans say. But she hasn't really been very clear on what she would do on lots of other policy things, even votes related to abortion, right? There's lots of things between national ban on abortion and Roe v. Wade, right? So she's been kind of unclear on that for sure.
Whichever way things shake out today, pundits are going to have a field day analyzing these results in the context of November's presidential race. Mark says what happens in Long Island could set a narrative about what voters care about, what's making them want to vote in the first place.
To me, I think what is important about it is we're seeing a kind of trial run for the parties, for the messaging, for candidates. It's a bit of an experiment to see what is working and what isn't. And I think that even before we know what happens, I do think that we know what has what the parties are interested in, right? And Pilip really seems to have hit her stride focusing on immigration. And so I don't think we're going to see that evaporate whether or not she wins.
Yeah. I mean, I look at this race and I see how it's potentially predictive of bigger trends in the 2024 election landscape. But that said, I feel like a loss for Republicans or Democrats would mean very different things for those parties. like Republicans winning this race, Mazie Pillip winning this race, it would be huge. It would mean like winning despite the Santos debacle with a totally untested candidate, pretty much, like just massive victory. For Democrats, I see winning this race as kind of the least they can do. Like, the suburbs are already trending toward Democrats. Biden won this district in 2020 by 10 points. The Republicans really screwed it up last time, and you have a very experienced person who literally used to do this job. So those mismatched stakes seem meaningful to me.
I think so. And there will be, I think there will be a lot of sort of post-election spin, right, on those, about those stakes. If Swazi loses here, it may be a sort of message, too, about what kind of message and kind of candidate is working super well in this moment, right? He tried to be this, or he is really this kind of very centrist, very, you know, kind of both sides, working across the aisle guy.
Well, a lot of people have just compared him directly to Biden. He's an older white guy who, very middle of the road, wants to come shake your hand and, you know, work it out.
He's a big Biden supporter, too. He's one of the first people to endorse Biden in his presidential run. So, yeah, it's a small sample, obviously. But if he can't kind of if voters aren't looking for that kind of quote unquote normality, I think that isn't the best message for Biden.
There's one more funny thing about this race, which is that New York is about to go through a whole bunch of redistricting, right?
Again,
yeah.
We're still kind of dealing with the last one.
So this race is going to happen. This person's going to be there for less than a year in Washington. And then it's like the coming of the tides. Like there will be another election to come and the district may look pretty different, right? Like, so should anyone really be worrying so much about this one special election in February?
This person will be very prominent, you know, in Washington in their brief time there, right? There's been a lot of focus already. And so they're coming into Washington as a bit of a name, right? They'll be riding high after winning, right? There'll be a lot of sort of lessons taken from their win, whichever side it is. So they'll have some months in DC to kind of be not exactly an unknown legislator, right? So there's that. And then it's possible that they could win again, right? Incumbency has real advantages. You actually don't need to live in the district that you are running from while you're running, right? That's not in the Constitution. So you have some time to move into a new district. This won't be like totally, totally different, right? I think Democrats are a little more focused on some other parts of Long Island to shore up or you know, make more into a Republican pit. So I don't think this person will be going away. I don't think that's the right lesson to take.
Mark, I'm really grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Chisano is a writer, journalist, and the author of The Fabulist, the lying, hustling, grifting, stealing, and very American legend of George Santos. And that's the show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Alana Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. Catch you back here next time.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.